Chapter 1 Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam was born in Mecca, Arabia on Monday, 12 Rabi al-Awwal or 2 August AD 570. His mother, Amina, was the daughter of Wahb ibn Abdumanaf of the Zahra family. His father, Abdullah, was the son of Abdul Muttalib. His genealogy has been traced to the noble house of Ismail, the son of Prophet Abraham in about the 14th decennial. Muhammad's father died before his birth. Before he was 6 years old, his mother died, and the doubly orphaned Muhammad was put under the charge of his grandfather, Abdul Muttalib, who took the most tender care of him. But the old chief died 2 years afterwards. On his deathbed, he confided to his son, Abu Talib, the charge of the little orphan. When Muhammad was 12 years old, he accompanied his uncle Abu Talib on a mercantile journey to Syria, and they proceeded as far as Busra. The journey lasted for some months. It was at Busra that the Christian Hmong Bahira met Muhammad. He is related to have said to Abu Talib, "Return with this boy and guard him against the hatred of the Jews, for a great career awaits your nephew." After this journey, the youth of Muhammad seems to have been passed uneventfully, but all authorities agree in ascribing to him such correctness of manner and purity of morals as were rare among the people of Mecca. The fair character and the honorable bearing of the unobtrusive youth won the approbation of the citizens of Mecca, and by common consent he received the title of Al-Amin, the Faithful. In his early years, Muhammad was not free from the cares of life. He had to watch the flocks of his uncle, who, like the rest of the Bani Hashim, had lost the greater part of his wealth. From youth to manhood, he led an almost solitary life. The lawlessness rife among the Meccans, the sudden outburst of causeless and bloody quarrels among the tribes frequenting the fair of Okat, the Arabian Olympia, and the immorality and skepticism of the Quraysh naturally caused feelings of pity and sorrow in the heart of the sensitive youth. Such scenes of social misery and religious degradation were characteristic of a depraved age. When Muhammad was 25 years old, he travelled once more to Syria as a factor of a noble and rich Qurayshi widow named Khadija, and having proved himself faithful in this commercial interest of that lady, he was soon rewarded with her hand in marriage. This marriage proved fortunate and singularly happy. Khadija was much the senior of her husband, but in spite of the disparity of age between them, the most tender devotion on both sides existed. This marriage gave him the loving heart of a woman who was ever ready to console him in his despair, and to keep alive within him the feeble, flickering flame of hope when no man believed in him, and the world appeared gloomy in his eyes. Until he reached 30 years of age, Muhammad was almost a stranger to the outside world. Since the death of his grandfather, authority in Mecca was divided among the 10 senators who constituted the governing body of the Arabian Commonwealth. There was no such accord among them as to ensure the safety of individual rights and property, though family relations afforded some degree of protection to citizens, yet strangers were frequently exposed to persecutions and oppressions. In many cases they were robbed, not only for their goods, but even of their wives and daughters. At the instigation of the faithful Muhammad, an old league called the Federation of Fudul. Favors was revived with the object of repressing lawlessness and defending every weak individual, whether Meccan or stranger, free or slave, against any wrong or oppression to which he might be the victim within the territories of Mecca. When Muhammad reached 35 years, he settled by his judgment a grave dispute, which threatened to plunge the whole of Arabia into a fresh series of her oft-recurring wars. and rebuilding the sacred house of the Kaaba in AD 605, the question arose as to who should have the honor of raising the black stone, the most holy relic of that house, into its proper place. Each tribe claimed that honor. The senior citizen advised the disputants to accept for their arbitrator the first man to enter from a certain gate. The proposal was agreed upon, and the first man who entered the gate was Muhammad al-Amin. His advice satisfied all the contending parties. He ordered the stone to be placed on a piece of cloth, and each tribe to share the honor of lifting it up by taking hold of a part of the cloth. The stone was thus deposited in its place, and the rebuilding of the house was completed without further interruption. It is related that, about this time, a certain Usman ibn Huayrith, supported by Byzantine gold, made an attempt to convert the territory of Hijaz into a Roman dependency, but the attempt failed, chiefly through the instrumentality of Muhammad. These are nearly all the public acts related by historians in which Muhammad took part in the first 15 years of his marriage to Khadija. As for his private life, he is described to have been ever helpful to the needy and the helpless. His uncle Abu Talib had fallen into distress through his endeavors to maintain the old position of his family. Muhammad, being rather rich at this time by his alliance with Khadija, tried to discharge part of the debt of gratitude and obligation which he owed to his uncle by undertaking the bringing up and education of his son Ali. A year later, he adopted Akil, another of his uncle's sons. Khadija bore Muhammad 3 sons and 4 daughters. All the males died in childhood, but in loving Ali, he found much consolation. About this time, Muhammad set a good example of kindness, which created a salutary effect upon his people. His wife Khadija had made him a present of a young slave named Zaid ibn Haritha, who had been brought as a captive to Mecca and sold to Khadija. When Haritha heard that Muhammad possessed Zaid, he came to Mecca and offered a large sum for his ransom, whereupon Muhammad said, "Let Zaid come here, and if he chooses to go with you, take him without ransom. But if it be his choice to stay with me, why should I not keep him?" Zaid, being brought into Muhammad's presence, declared that he would stay with his master, who treated him as if he was his only son. Muhammad no sooner heard this than he took Zaid by the hand and led him to the black stone of Kaaba, where he publicly adopted him as his son, to which the father acquiesced and returned home well satisfied. Henceforward, Zaid was called the son of Muhammad. Muhammad was now approaching his 14th year, and his mind was ever engaged in profound contemplation and reflection. Before him lay his country, bleeding and torn by fratricidal wars and intolerable dissensions, his people sunk in barbarism, addicted to the observation of rites and superstitions, were, with all their desert virtues, lawless and cruel. His 2 visits to Syria had opened to him a scene of unutterable moral and social desolation, rival creeds and sects tearing each other to pieces, carrying their hatred to the valleys and deserts of Hijaz, and rending the townships of Arabia with their quarrels and bitterness. Chapter 2. For years after his marriage, Muhammad had been accustomed to secluding himself in a cave in Mount Hira, a few miles from Mecca. To this cave he used to go for prayer and meditation, sometimes alone and sometimes with his family. There he often spent the whole nights in deep thought and profound communication with the unseen yet all-knowing Allah of the universe. It was during one of those retirements, and in the still hours of the night, when no human sympathy was near, that an angel came to him to tell him that he was the messenger of Allah sent to reclaim a fallen people to the knowledge and service of their Lord. Renowned compilers of authentic traditions of Islam agree on the following account of the first revelations received by the Prophet. Muhammad would seclude himself in the cave of Mount Hira and worship 3 days and nights. He would, whenever he wished, return to his family at Mecca and then go back again, taking with him the necessities of life. Thus, he continued to return to Khadija from time to time until one day the revelation came down to him and the angel Gabriel or Jibril appeared to him and said, "Read." But as Muhammad was illiterate, having never received any instruction in reading or writing, he said to the angel, "I am not a reader." The angel took a hold of him and squeezed him as much as he could bear, and then said again, "Read." Then Prophet said, "I am not a reader." The angel again seized the Prophet and squeezed him and said, "Read in the name of your Lord, who has created all that exists, has created a man from a clot, a piece of thick coagulated blood. Read, and your Lord is the most generous, who has thought the writing by the pen, has thought the man that which he knew not." Chapter 96, verse 1-4, Al-Quran. Then the Prophet repeated the words with a trembling heart. He returned to Khadija from Mount Hira and said, "Wrap me up, wrap me up." She wrapped him in a garment until his fear was dispelled. He told Khadija what had occurred and that he was becoming either a soothsayer or one smitten with madness. She replied, "Allah forbid. He will surely not let such a thing happen. For you speak the truth. You are faithful in trust. You bear the afflictions of the people. You spend in good works what you gain in trade. You are hospitable, and you assist your fellow men." "Have you seen anything terrible?" Muhammad replied. "Yes," and told her what he had seen. Whereupon Khadija said, "Rejoice, O dear husband, and be cheerful. He is whose hand stands Khadija's life bears witness to the truth of this fact, that you will be the prophet to this people." Then she arose and went to her cousin, Waraqa ibn Nawfal, who was old and blind, and who knew the scriptures of the Jews and Christians, and is stated to have translated them into Arabic. When she told him of what she had heard, he cried out, "Holy! Holy! Verily, this is the Namus, the Holy Spirit who came to Moses. He will be the prophet of his people. Tell him this and bid him to be brave at heart." When the two men met subsequently in the street, the blind old student of the Jewish and Christian scriptures spoke of his faith and trust. "I swear by him in whose hand Waraqa's life is, Allah has chosen you to be the prophet of this people. They will call you a liar, they will persecute you, they will banish you, and they will fight against you. Oh, that I could live to those days, I would fight for these." And he kissed him on the forehead. The first vision was followed by a considerable period, during which Muhammad suffered much mental depression. The angel spoke to the grieved heart of hope and trust, and of the bright future when he would see the people of the earth crowding into the one true faith. His destiny was unfolded to him when, wrapped in profound meditation, melancholy and sad, he felt himself called by a voice from heaven to arise and preach. "O you, enveloped in garments, arise and warn, and your Lord magnify." Chapter 74, verse 1-3, Al-Quran. He arose and engaged himself in the work to which he was called. Khadija was the first to accept his mission. She was to believe in the revelations, to abandon the idolatry of her people, and to join him in purity of heart and in offering up prayers to Allah the Almighty. At the beginning of his mission, Muhammad, hereinafter called the Prophet, opened his soul only to those who were attached to him and tried to free them from the gross practices of their forefathers. After Khadija, his cousin Ali was the next companion. The Prophet used often to go into the desert around Mecca with his wife and young cousin that they might together offer their heartfelt thanks to the Lord of all nations for his manifold blessings. Once they were surprised by Abu Talib, the father of Ali. He said to the Prophet, "O son of my brother, what is this religion you are following?" "It is the religion of Allah, of his angel, of his messengers, and of our ancestor Abraham," answered the Prophet. "Allah has sent me to his servants to direct them towards the truth, and you, O my uncle, are the most worthy of all. It is meet that I should thus call upon you, and it is meet that you should accept the truth and help in spreading it." Abu Talib replied, "Son of my brother, I cannot abjure the religion of my fathers, but by the Supreme Lord, while I am alive, none shall dare to injure you." Then turning towards Ali, the venerable chief asked what religion was his. Ali answered, "O father, I believe in Allah and his Prophet and go with him." Abu Talib replied, "Well, my son, I will not call you to anything except what is good. Therefore, you are free to go with him." After Ali, Muhammad's adopted son, Zaid, became a convert to the new faith. He was followed by Abu Bakr, a leading member of the Quraysh tribe and an honest, wealthy merchant who enjoyed great consideration among his compatriots. He was but 2 years younger than the Prophet. His adoption of the new faith was of great moral effect. Soon after, 5 notables presented themselves before the Prophet and accepted Islam. Several converts also came from lower classes of the Arabs to adopt the new religion. For 3 weary long years, the Prophet labored very quietly to deliver his people from the worship of idols. Polytheism was deeply rooted among the people. It offered attractions which the new faith, in its purity, did not possess. The Quraysh had personal material interests in the old worship, and their prestige was dependent upon its maintenance. The Prophet had to contend with the idolatrous worship of its followers and to oppose the ruling oligarchy which governed its destinies. Chapter 3. After 3 years of constant but quiet struggle, only 30 followers were secured. An important change now occurred in the relations of the Prophet with the citizens of Mecca. His compatriots had begun to doubt his sanity, thinking him crazy or possessed by an evil spirit. Hitherto, he preached quietly and unobtrusively. He now decided to appeal publicly to the Meccans, requesting them to abandon their idolatry. For this, he arranged a gathering on a neighboring hill and there spoke to them of their folly in the sight of Allah in worshipping pieces of stone which they called their gods. He invited them to abandon their old impious worship and adopt the faith of love, truth, and purity. He warned them of the fate that had overtaken past races who had not heeded the preaching of former prophets. But the gathering departed without listening to the warning given them by the Prophet. Having thus failed to induce his fellow citizens to listen to him, he turned his attention to the strangers arriving in the city on commerce or pilgrimage. but Grouch made attempt to frustrate his efforts. They hastened themselves to meet the strangers first on different routes, to warn them against holding any communication with the prophet, whom they represented as a dangerous magician. When the pilgrims or traders returned to their homes, they carried with them the news of the advent of the blood preacher, who was inviting the Arabs loudly, at the risk of his own life, to abandon the worship of their dear idols. Now the prophet and his followers became subject to some persecution and indignity. The hostile Quraysh prevented the prophet from offering his prayers at the sacred house of the Kaaba. They pursued him wherever he went. They covered him and his disciples with dirt and filth when engaged in their devotions. They scattered thorns in the places which he frequented for devotion and meditation. Amidst all these trials, the prophet did not waver. He was full of confidence in his mission, even when on several occasions he was put in imminent danger of losing his life. At this time, Hamza, the youngest son of Abdul Muttalib, adopted Islam. Hamza was a man of distinguished bravery, an intrepid warrior, generous and true, whose heroism earned for him the title of the Lion of Allah. He became a devoted adherent of Islam and ever lost his life in the cause. The Prophet continued preaching to the Arabs in a most gentle and reasonable manner. He called the people, so accustomed to iniquity and wrongdoings, to abandon their abominations. In burning words, which excited the hearts of his hearers, he warned them of the punishment which Allah had inflicted upon the ancient tribes of Ad and Thamud, who had obstinately disobeyed the teachings of Allah's messenger to them. He adjured them by the wonderful sights of nature, by the noonday brightness, by the night when it spreads its veil, by the day when it appears in glory, to listen to his warning before a similar destruction befell them. He spoke to them of the day of the reckoning, when their deeds in this world will be weighed before the eternal judge, when the children who had been buried alive will be asked for what the crime they were put to death. Almighty Allah said, "Nay, they wonder that there has come to them a warner from among themselves. So the disbelievers say, 'This is a strange thing. When we are dead and have become dust, shall we be resurrected? That is a far return.' We know that which the earth takes of them, their dead bodies, and with us is a book preserved. Nay, but they have denied the truth when it has come to them, so they are in a confused state, cannot differentiate between right and wrong. Have they not looked at the heaven above them, how we have made it and adorned it, and there are no rifts in it? And the earth, we have spread it out, and set thereon mountains standing firm, and have produced therein every kind of lovely growth or plants. An insight and a reminder for every slave turning to Allah, the one who believes in Allah and performs deeds of his obedience and always beg his pardon. And we send down blessed water from the sky, then we produce therewith gardens and grain, every kind of harvest that are reaped, and tall date palms with ranged clusters, a provision for Allah's slaves, and we give life therewith to a dead land. Thus will be the resurrection of the dead. Denied before them, these pagans of Makkah who denied you, O Muhammad, the people of Noah and the dwellers of Ras and the Thamud and Ad and Pharaoh and the brethren of Lot and the dwellers of the wood and the people of Tuba, every one of them denied their messengers. So my threat took effect." Chapter 15, Verse 2-14 Al-Quran. Almighty Allah also declared, "All praises and thanks be to Allah, who alone created the heavens and the earth, and originated the darkness and the light. Yet those who disbelieve hold others as equal with their Lord. He it is who has created you from clay, and that has decreed a stated term for you to die, and there is with him another determined term for you to be resurrected, yet you doubt in the resurrection. And he is Allah to be worshipped alone in the heavens and on the earth. He knows what you conceal and what you reveal, and he knows what you earn, either good or bad. And never an ayah or sign comes to them from the ayat, proofs, evidence, lessons, signs, revelations of their Lord, but that they have been turning away from it. Indeed, they rejected the truth when it came to them. But there will come to them the news of that the torment which they used to mock at. Have they not seen how many a generation before them we have destroyed whom we had established on the earth such as we have not established you? And we poured out on them rain from the sky in abundance and made the rivers flow under them. Yet we destroyed them for their sins and created after them other generations. Chapter 6, verse 1-6, Al-Quran.
The end.